Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
No idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little lassies and Prada shoes at me, honey.
John Callio, will you go round with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a curve?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, to coincide with a nationwide initiative launched by the Adelaide Film Festival, we are celebrating the top queer Australian films at hashtag You Must See.
The You Must See campaign calls on audiences to celebrate, honour and acknowledge their favourite Australian screen stories and supports the current hashtag Make It Australian campaign, which throws the light on building a sustainable national screen industry.
Well, if you like your hashtags and have been following Make It Australian, I have to say Australian.
Australian?
You would have noticed a few weeks ago, Judy Davis, Richard Roxburgh and Deborah Mailman were just some of the people that went up to Canberra about this hashtag. And it's more than a hashtag. It's a campaign that's pulling together writers, directors, actors. Basically, they went to Canberra because they want local content obligations to involve new marketplaces that we're seeing in this game, from Netflix, Amazon, all those kind of things. Make competitive tax office. Let us be competitive in the filmmaking industry, because if it keeps going the way we're going, we're not going to have an Australian industry left.
Well, I think this is something that we have talked about on the program before. You know, we love spotlighting queer content. We love spotlighting Australian content. And I think there is a real anxiety in the Australian film industry at the moment with the kind of proliferation of all of these kind of streaming platforms. The film industry globally is in peril. It is in danger. And that is even truer for local film industries,
huge,
which aren't as big as some of the monoliths
in
America.
Yeah, budget ones.
And so there is an anxiety about how do we build a sustainable Australian film industry. And I think this new hashtag You Must See, Australian Films You Must See, is a really great initiative to kind of remind us of some of the brilliant work that our local filmmakers have done. And what we're doing is adding another dimension to that by spotlighting really great, fantastic queer Australian films that you must hashtag You Must
See.
But I think people really forget how quickly we can lose our industry. And just like we talk about every MQFF, how easily if we don't go and support our festival, we won't have one. The same is real about our current Australian industry. And I kid you not, they're talking about dropping quotas for kids TV. It starts small, but its impact is huge. Yeah.
So we will be spotlighting our top queer Australian films that you might hashtag You Must See. I'm going to get that right eventually. And to help us do this evening, we'll be joined by the artistic director of the Adelaide Film Festival, Amanda Duthie, who will be speaking to us about the campaign and also about the broader initiatives that the Adelaide Film Festival has put in place to really spotlight the importance of a sustainable local film industry.
And we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear what you think about Australian film, what your favourite Australian film is, or even your favourite queer Australian film. And so join the conversation, text in, let us know, and you can go into the running for a double pass to see Whitney, which is an intimate and unflinching portrait of Houston and her family that probes beyond familiar tabloid headlines and sheds new light on the spellbinding trajectory of Houston's life.
So not an Australian film.
It's not an Australian film, but we have a double pass to give away, courtesy of Cinema Nova. And it's for a double pass to see the film on July the 19th at Cinema Nova at 6:15. So please message in and let us know your thoughts on Australian film. You can email us
on air at joy.org.au.
You go. And SMS on 0427 joy947. It's right there, yes.
0427 joy949. That's the number. Message in, let us know what is your favourite Australian film. What is the queer Australian feature film that hashtag you must see? I'm going to get it right eventually.
Eventually.
Queer Australian film.
You're not hashtag, on Twitter. This is that why that's hashtag, an issue.
Yeah.
It's very hard to verbalise the hashtag continuously. I think we've established that. Can I just ask something, and I mean this sincerely. So obviously the Make It Australian campaign is all about really around funding and how funding, and if I'm wrong, just correct me, is around funding and how the industry can sustain itself and continue to be creative and develop.
I think it's beyond funding. Right. It's kind of saying to the players out there that if you don't allow, it's almost asking for quotas, but not, you know, kind of say, if you don't invest in Australian content. So if we just let Netflix go on without, and they haven't yet invested
they
in,
they
don't have to invest in Australian, programs. It's just yet another platform where there is no Australian content. Mm-hmm. There's no incentive for them to invest yet. A lot of money is made in producing content for here.
I mean, it's interesting because
it's just another channel. Think of it as another channel.
Some of these platforms do invest a lot of money in local content. I mean,
not in Australia.
A lot of the platforms are driven by diversity. So I think there is an argument that can be made, a commercial case that can be made in the boardrooms of these great streaming services to encourage local production.
Do you know what actually matters to these streaming platforms?
The dollar.
And they use all these kind of little
algorithms.
Mm-hmm. That's their key word. Mm-hmm. So what you're watching now is going to determine what you're going to be shown. Mm-hmm. And if you're not watching Australian films that are up there now that have been paid, you're not going to keep seeing that. And it's just telling them, what is it that audience want to see? So if we're not clicking on Australian films, there's very few. I think I saw 10 on their list yesterday under Australian titles. You're not going to get more.
So one of the,
why would they put that there?
And that makes perfect sense.
Because there's no demand.
I was reading an article about how Netflix is championing at the moment that they're releasing their first Hindi crime drama. It's made in there and everything. And it always sounds like they're investing all this money in these programs. Mm-hmm. But same as what's just happened recently, they're funding a new documentary series in New Zealand as well, putting it out there. They're actually picking these shows up after they've been filmed, produced, and everything, and then putting it out there as a Netflix original because it's the first place that they land.
Oh,
and this is to say, and it's not to forget, there's Stan, there's YouTube, there's Amazon, there's all this, but these new platforms now buy stuff that's made.
Yeah. Yeah.
So someone has to find the money to make it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Unlike when you're making something for television or film, there's usually money invested to help you make it, and then, you know, everyone gets their bits at the end.
So there are obviously these really important dialogues that are taking place within the film industry, and it would be great to see these dialogues kind of spill over into our kind of everyday conversations. But I think
what's going to happen.
Hashtag not going to happen.
I think that a hashtag campaign like this, hashtag you must see, so Australian films, hashtag you must see, is I think really clever if people can actually learn to pronounce the hashtag, because what it does is it gets us thinking about and celebrating some of our really great Australian content, and that's what we're going to be doing tonight. So we're going to revisit some films that we've already looked at, which we think are excellent examples of local queer content done well, but we're also going to be spotlighting some what we're going to call hidden gems, films that we haven't looked at on the program before, which we think are queer Australian films that hashtag you must see.
Hang on, Daniel. I need to say we're sort of mining the back catalogue of films from before you were born.
No, we really are.
This is what it is. These are films from before Daniel was born, or before Daniel learned to walk or even talk, possibly.
Before Titanic.
Maybe that's definitely.
Before Titanic. Oh, BT.
True. Right. Conrad's going to talk about a film that came out three years ago.
Oh, well, you know, that's the exception, right?
I'm the disruptor on the panel.
Just because, so Alan, your point of reference is from before I was born.
Hashtag film so old.
I don't hashtag. I'm not on Twitter. Look, and this is the thing. Yeah.
Do message in. Join in the conversation. If you want to prove Alan wrong and point out a really great Australian film produced after the year 1988. Do message in on 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. Right after this, we are speaking with Amanda Duthie. She is the artistic director of the Adelaide Film Festival. She's the one spearheading this new campaign, and we're going to speak to her about Australian films that hashtag you must see. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are spotlighting queer Australian films that hashtag you must see to coincide with an initiative launched by the Adelaide Film Festival. And we're joined on the phone now by the artistic director of the Adelaide Film Festival, Amanda Duthie. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Amanda, it's great to have you on. We've been talking a little bit about some of the great films that have been already coming up in the campaign, but I'm interested to hear from you. What makes a great Australian film that we must see?
Well, I think the beauty of this national campaign is that it's utterly personal. So it's not about the best crafted film, is not about the most important film. It's very much about what touched your heart, what moved you when you were a teenager, or older, the first time you saw, you know, an independent film after you've watched too many Hollywood blockbusters. what is that, you know, the first time you went to an independent cinema and you just couldn't believe what you were seeing, where it sort of opens your eyes to cinema and opens your eyes to different ways of telling stories. But I think also what has been really, really fascinating with this campaign is that, you know, we hear so often, oh, you know, audiences, they don't like Australian films, they don't go to Australian films. But once you start the conversation, what is amazing is they go, oh, but I can't stop at 3, I need 30. You know, because all of a sudden you're remembering, you know, whether it is BMX Bandits or whether it is Storm Boy or, you know, whatever it might be, or when people come across, you know, a classic, whether it's through independent cinema or through film festivals, and then they realise, wow, this stuff was being made in Australia and I never knew about it. So it's such a fantastic opportunity to have a revelation about the extraordinary breadth of Australian screen stories.
And you have had some industry heavyweights kind of weigh in on the debate. So David Stratton, for instance, has said that his films you must see are Newsfront, Gallipoli, Blessed. Margaret Pomeranz has said the films you must see are Samson and Delilah, Beneath Clouds and The Babadook. Hugo Weaving has said Ten Canoes. Are we allowed to ask you what your film you must see is?
I knew you were going to ask that, and everybody does. But, okay, here's the thing. It closes on July 30. I am utterly giving myself until the 23rd hour on July 30 to make up my mind because, you know, the absolute treat of doing this is that every time someone sort of sends in a vote, you go, oh, of course, what about that?
Yeah.
You know, just talking about Melbourne filmmakers, you know, someone was talking about Dogs in Space the other day and Ghosts of the Civil Dead, Autoluminescent, the Roland F. Howard documentary. And then you start to sort of, it takes you down different roads and different memories and the different list of films that you remember. But I don't know if Dr. George Miller, he did have The Sentimental Bloke, which I think was the earliest film on the list. I don't know.
1919, someone, I think, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if someone's pipped him yet, but it's also so exciting to go back into the last century and have a look and see what pops up there. But tell me, what are your top three?
Oh, that's too hard. But I wanted to, there's an amazing list on your website now.
Yeah.
I've actually got it in front of me. And you know, we're sitting here with highlighters going, oh, my God, I forgot that. I forgot about that. Forgot about that. Yeah, oh, my God, what exactly. a great film. Yeah. And it's almost a great point of reference to point people to go, oh, my God, do you remember? Let's go and see that or let's find that film again. There is one film missing, but I don't know if I want to add it to the list. And I tried to get the guys to watch it during the week because it's kind of a queer film, kind of not.
Tell me, what is it?
Strange Bedfellows with Paul Hogan and Michael Caine from 2004.
There is a reason.
I think there's a reason it might not be on the list and people haven't voted
Maybe
for it.
Maybe we have to wait for them to vote for that.
Yeah, we'll wait for them.
Possibly.
See, I was ready to go with my top three. I could have done my top three straight away, but go. I feel like I shouldn't.
You're going to wash your mouth out
no,
now?
No, I want to hear it. Fire away.
Really?
Yeah, do it.
Moulin Rouge, it's definitely, Moulin Rouge is definitely in there. Lore from Kate Shortland, who I think everyone has their eye on at the moment. So I think she's a really important Australian voice. And I'm going to say Head On just for sentimental factor. Mm. So
yeah, Head On, such a good brilliant list. Film.
That's good.
There you go. That wasn't hard at all.
The Dish is always my top Australian film.
Oh, wow, right.
I struggle with 2 and 3, but The Dish has always been top and it's on the list. So I'm happy it's
it is on the list. One film that keeps coming back a lot, and I think it is one of those, I saw it when I was young and I've never been able to forget it, is The Year My Voice Broke. That's been coming up quite a lot. And, you know, very, very pleasing to see so many extraordinary Indigenous filmmakers and Indigenous films in here as well. But yeah, a lot, obviously, from this century. But you know, some do hark back.
Well, you know, harking back to the previous century, one film that really stands out for me is Puberty Blues from 1981.
That is such a
classic film of the early 80s, and what it feels like to go through puberty, and it's actually quite queer in its own special way.
Yes, I mean that was the book that was just shared secretly in class in high school, and you'd just try and read as much as you possibly could in history class, and then sort of pass it on to the next person. But of course, that whole new generation has now seen the series, but the film is very different, a lot more raw. Yeah.
Mm. Now you are celebrating Australian film as a way of kind of spotlighting the Make It Australian campaign, which is currently afoot. Why is it so important to you and to the festival to be spotlighting a campaign like this?
Well, the really unique thing about the Adelaide Film Festival is that we have an investment fund, which we started in 2003. I'm not quite sure what year Melbourne started theirs after.
Is this the Hive
but
fund?
Hive is part of our investment fund.
This would be Jim Besson and Helen James Awards. Is that the one?
No, we have too many different funds. We have a lot going on. So the investment fund is where we're able to commission works for the Adelaide Film Festival, and it's been running since 2003. And so films like Sweet Country, 52 Tuesdays, Charlie's Country, Snowtown, Samson and Delilah, After the Apology, Cargo, Shorts, and also Art and the Moving Image are all commissioned through the Adelaide Film Festival, and that means that we premiere that work at the Adelaide Film Festival. So that means that we're a film festival that, you know, presents and celebrates cinema from all over the world and also Australia, but it also means that we can enable that work to be made and presented through the film festival and then back out into the world and through national release in Australia. So we had been toying with what we were going to do for 2018, you know, back in 2017, and we were thinking how great it would be to just engage and gift the audience the opportunity to curate a strand of the film festival. And it's, how do we do that? Well, let's celebrate Australian film, because here we are in our 15th year of the Adelaide Film Festival, and so it's a birthday of sorts. How do we want to celebrate our birthday? Let's celebrate the stories that we love and also through that be able to celebrate many of the films that we've been able to invest in.
Fantastic.
So it's sort of synchronised, you know, by chance, but incredibly well with the Make It Australian campaign. And that's very focused on prioritising Australian industry to make Australian stories, whereas we see the My Top Three You Must See campaign very much about enabling Australian audiences to show what they love and what they respond to. And we think it's sort of, it's quite fascinating, the films that the people have chosen, and I'm sure it'll be really, really interesting for all of us to see the great reveal of what Australia voted as their, you know, top 10, 20, 30, 40 films.
Well, in a way, the two initiatives kind of go really, really well together, I think, because they start a discussion about why Australian content is so important. And clearly, screening Australian voices, having Australian content is clearly fundamental to a festival like the Adelaide Film Festival. Why do you think it's so important that we can, in this kind of global era of streaming platforms where, you know, we can get the same content around the world, why is it still so important that we continue to have local voices on the big screen?
I think what you say is true. You know, there is just this white noise of stories from all over the world. Good films, good screen stories have universal themes so that we can recognise ourselves, whether it's a city or a village or a mountain or, you know, on a boat. But when you hear your own accent or when you see and hear the familiar that only you can genuinely relate to, I think that is a very powerful thing to do. So to be able to be local but still push it out to a global market is incredibly important, not just for Australian filmmakers but for Australian audiences. Otherwise, I mean, literally, but figuratively, we can lose our accent in understanding who we are. Whether that's it's not all happy stuff, but it's also the incredibly challenging stuff. No one can challenge us like we can challenge ourselves. So I think that's why it's so incredibly important, not just feature films, but for television, for our moving image and artwork, for our interactive projects. It's about the authenticity of us, and it might be a subgroup or a particular community, from what I mean in inverted commas by us. It's not sort of a generic Australian voice. But once we start to hear that and recognise it and see it still around us, and it's not getting drowned by everything that's sort of swamping in through streaming services or, you know, every other platform that we might have access to. I think that's incredibly important, not just for us. With me for decades of watching stuff, but, you know, the kids and the teenagers coming through, where are they in these big stories?
It's clearly you know, this campaign is spotlighting some really important ideas. And what I love about it is that everyone can get involved. How can people get involved?
You've got 2 weeks. So duke it out over the water cooler or the dinner party or on the tram. It doesn't matter. Come up with your top three. And, I mean, we chose three because if you choose one, most often people choose the one that they think they have to choose. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you get into 2 and 3, then the guilty pleasure or the odd
sentimental
one that you
yeah.
think, you know, if I had to choose one film, then that has to be the best Australian film. But these are the films that touched you for whatever plethora of reasons you have. And it means that the list can sort of be broader, obviously, but also it can get just a little bit, have a few more creaky corners in it than the usual suspects. So go online, adelaidefilmfestival.org, get your 3 votes in. Please share it with your friends because, obviously, the more hits we have, the more titles we have. I think it makes for a much more interesting reveal at the end. And then And then a selection of those films will be shown through the Adelaide Film Festival in October. But, you know, I would, you know, distributors are very interested in what the results are going to be. Cinemas are very interested in what the results are going to be, because it's sort of literally the audience saying, hey, we really like these films, why don't you show them? So it might sort of engender a little bit of a retrospective environment in our cinemas, which would be really fantastic.
Well, look, thank you so much for joining us this evening, Amanda. It's been wonderful to have you on the program.
Pleasure, and I can't wait to hear your final bit.
Stay tuned.
That was Amanda Duthie. She is the artistic director of the Adelaide Film Festival, speaking to us about their new campaign, Australian Feature Films, hashtag You Must See. We are putting a queer spin on that, Australian Queer Films, hashtag You Must See. And we want to hear from you. What is the Australian queer film that you think that you must see? I can't get my head
around
this.
Hashtag help Daniel out. Right. Hashtag message in on 0427JOY949. And you could win. What can you win?
A double pass to Whitney.
Yay.
Courtesy of Cinema Nova. Let us know.
I clearly am not.
Oh, look, hang on. Oh, look, looks like we've got a message.
Oh, there you go.
Wow, we do. Look, we've got one here from, we've got a message in. We've got Somersault, Sam Worthington kissing Eric Thompson.
Oh.
I do.
And do you know that one?
Yeah, another Kate Shortland film. She is one to watch. She's just been tapped to direct the Black Widow film with Scarlett Johansson, who is in a bit of controversy.
Okay.
We are not having a chat about Scarlett this evening, but yeah. Kate Shortland is definitely a director to watch, and she's one of our finest. I said Law before. That was this brilliant kind of co-production, German-Australian co-production, set in the aftermath of the Second World War, about the daughter of a... It's a kind of sexual coming-of-age story that centres on the daughter of a Nazi officer who kind of flees and leaves the children to fend for themselves.
Lighthearted, clearly.
I love a bit of lighthearted there.
Always.
Why not?
So coming up after this, we are going to be spotlighting some queer Australian favourites that we've looked at on the programme before, and we'll also be spotlighting some forgotten gems that we've pulled from the backlogs of Australian cinema that we will be taking out and dusting off and celebrating. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, to coincide with a brilliant new initiative from the Adelaide Film Festival, we are spotlighting queer Australian films that hashtag you must see.
You said Australian, like
did
I asked
I?
You to.
Yeah. I can't,
it's stick
I can't
by the end
say
of
it
night.
Without
Australian.
In putting that inflection on it.
Yeah. As the only non-Australian on the panel, I do have to say, I was really looking forward to this program because it started to make me think about all of the Australian films I saw when I was living in New Zealand and living overseas as well. I had this amazing independent movie theatre when I was at uni that used to do like really cheap films during the day. So, you know, when you can't be bothered going to class.
Lectures.
You know where I was.
So and, the cheap films are the Aussie ones.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no. All of the films that were on during the day were cheap, I should say that, to go to, especially as a student. But there was this real time, it was about, you know, like 95 to 99. There was just this really great wave of Australian cinema that was coming out. And when I came over here, when I moved here in 2000 and I would be talking to people about them, it always shocked me that a lot of Australians hadn't seen these films.
Yeah.
And when I'd start to go back, I'd go, was I seeing like a ridiculous amount of films? But it started to come out more and more, that cultural cringe, which I'd never really experienced before because New Zealanders are the complete opposite when it comes to a New Zealand film. When a Kiwi film comes out, it just kind of becomes this whole big thing because there's all this other stuff usually attached to it, and it becomes, you know, I mean, there's films that don't do so well, but there's others that are just like through the roof.
Is that like Foot Right Flats? Was that a big Kiwi film?
Oh my God.
Was that just massive?
Yeah, but it had like a whole 25-year lead up of books and cartoons comics being sold to it.
Oh, trust the one Kiwi in the room to steer the direction of the conversation away from Australia.
Fascinated in this cultural cringe, which no one else seems to have. but us.
It absolutely is true.
And it's very bad here.
Yeah.
Like, especially when I talk about certain films that I've got, like, a really kind of, it was a really sweet film or whatever, people will never just be able to go, oh, yeah, I liked it. They're just like, oh, no, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
And it's always throwing me.
Sorry to detour a little bit, but I remember every time we'd be watching some perform, you know, a lot of actors have to go and sell their films. Mm. And there was nothing more that I hated than seeing actors also putting down the films because of this cultural cringe factor, because that was the only way they could be taken seriously. I would notice there was, and I'm not going to name and shame people here, but they would literally be taking the piss out of themselves and the film, going, if you go and see this, you're dope.
Yeah.
And it kind of feeds into that.
They're talking themselves out of a job.
Exactly.
How ridiculous.
No, so
ridiculous.
Would make me so angry. And it was usually comedies, and it was usually low-budget comedies, and it was usually comedians, okay, playing in these roles.
Right.
And I just thought, no, you're doing the whole film and the whole industry a disservice to play into that cultural cringe.
So let's talk then about some of the films which we've looked at on the program before, which are great exemplars of queer Australian content, which kind of capture the spirit of the times. For me, I think it's really hard to look past a film like Head On, which is a film that we've spotlighted on the program a number of times, it just captures the spirit of its time so well. It captures the kind of coming of age, the kind of gritty rawness of coming of age so well. Anna Kokkinos is such a wonderful Australian filmmaker who is, I think, so authentic and true. And I think all of her work, but especially for our purposes, a film like this, is a really great example of why local content is so important and how local content can resonate so much more with local audiences.
So this was one of the films that I saw when I was in New Zealand. That I saw actually. It was
1998.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think I saw this film three times with three different people because I was dragging all of my Kiwi friends to go and see it. When I moved to Melbourne, it was a real touchstone for me, like a real reference point. And I was at a dinner party 2 weeks ago, table full of gay men, just talking about stuff, and Head On came out because someone was talking about a book that they took on holiday recently, and they were, you know, talking about some of his other works and everything, and came back to Head On, and every single person at that table had some kind of reference to it, because it is so Melbourne, but it is also a story that is really Australian from a perspective that I'd never seen before, and it really opened my eyes to it, because that's one of the things I love about Australian films is half the time I see these films, I go, well, that's an Australian story that I've never seen before.
Well, we've spotlighted the film on the program. Is it spotlit or spotlighted?
Ooh.
One you can get haberdashery from. Anyway, moving right along. We love
We've
this
looked
film.
At the
we
film so a well. Number of times on our program, and we've had Anna Kokkinos on the program a few times, who speaks so eloquently about all of the different factors in her life which led her to direct this film.
They tell you to believe in something.
Ari!
Believe in family, in the future, save the world. Believe in love.
I've got the right to do what I want!
You've been in love?
Every time, sugar.
No, I mean really in love.
I was never mainstream. You know, I was Greek, came from a working class background. That immigrant experience made me an outsider. My sexuality made me an outsider. And so and how one negotiates those things within family, within a broader social context, within a broader culture has been a great source of inspiration. It's also been a very interesting way to explore bigger questions of how we live in the world and how we belong, you know, how we find a way to navigate those complexities and the conflicts that creates within family, for example. Mm. How that makes you feel as a person when you feel that you are not really part of the mainstream. And all of my films, I think, have touched on that about emerging identity and how one belongs. Head On certainly was probably the most obvious expression of the way in which cultural identity, sexuality, intersects with class, intersects with a lot of things that are coming from a place of also wanting to express a celebration of nonconformity as well, in a way. So,
yeah.
So, ironically, one struggles with being an outsider, and yet, on some level, I think I've also celebrated that outsider status in all my films, and in particular in Head On.
Well, that was Anna Kokkinos talking about all of those different factors which led her to direct this wonderful film that has now become part of our kind of cultural fabric, certainly within kind of queer local communities.
Would I be right in saying that potentially that Head On is our number one queer Australian film for all of us here on the panel? Would I be right in saying
that? You know
what,
to quote our previous guest, I think it has that authenticity of us. I love that quote she left us with. And I think Head On has, well, for me as a Greek Australian, as a gay Greek Australian, it certainly has.
Yeah. Is it number one? I mean, it's up there.
Yeah.
It's hard to kind of tease out a number one.
I'm going
to
call it.
But we could be Melbourne.
I'm calling it. It's an executive decision. It's the Outtakes number one queer Australian film. You've heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
Hashtag heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
You see, I know a fair few people who would argue the case for Priscilla.
And that's a good case to argue. I mean, if you're talking high profile, Priscilla kind of was that film that took Australia to the world and told this really fascinating story. I saw that film with my parents in New Zealand, and we loved it. Like, it was great. I saw it again with my sister, and it made more sense because she was explaining some of the other references to me. And I think, you know, I've been in places all over the world, and people always reference Priscilla. You know, cock and a frock and a rock.
Exactly.
Every gay Aussie boy loves saying that at some time in their life.
Is it because you can't? No more effing ever.
Yes. Is it because you can't take Head On onto Broadway? Like, it's got a really different kind of.
You could try. Head On Broadway.
Head On Broadway, and just a spotlight to, you know, some background scenes.
Could take all the numbers.
There you go. Somebody's fund that.
I also think there's a real case to be made for Moulin Rouge. I'm sorry.
Always.
I mean, this is one of those camp films that no one wants to place at the top of their list, but I really do feel like Baz struck gold with this film.
It's a great film, but it's not queer.
Alan, have I taught you nothing?
Young? Tell me.
It's got Kylie in it.
I wrote my
It hasn't got Kylie.
Yes, Moulin it does. Have,
oh, it does. It like does. A little
cameo. Little fairy.
Little green fairy. I wrote my thesis,
PhD.
Second year Australian Cinema Studies.
Hashtag
on
nerd.
The queerness of Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet.
Hashtag what a reach.
Yes, drawing the long
hashtag
bow.
Hashtag not surprised.
Good on you.
Never mind, Daniel. Moulin Rouge is a great film. Pity it didn't make our top 10 soundtracks of all time.
Controversial. Cinema. Oh, God. Let's not take us back there.
So we talked about Head On, Priscilla Queen of the Desert, Moulin Rouge, which is the long bow.
Holding the Man, I feel like a lot of people are going to place that up there.
Yes. Yeah. And there's all these sentimental ones as well. Like we were talking about The Sum of Us,
Muriel's Wedding.
Yeah, all those sorts of. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many. I mean, that's the great thing about this campaign. There's just so many.
Coming up next, we are going to shift gears. We've been looking at some of the, I think, better known queer Australian films, but after this, we're going to be spotlighting some forgotten gems, films that don't usually get brought up in conversations about great Australian content, and we'll be making the case for those films right after this.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are spotlighting great queer Australian films that hashtag you must see to coincide with a new initiative spearheaded by the Adelaide Film Festival.
And you know what? We have had another message from someone who's probably slightly critical of our list, because this person goes, Nah. Night Out is this person's call. So this is a film from 1990. It's a film that I don't think any of us here have actually heard.
No.
About. So Night Out from our anonymous caller. And please text in and let us know your membership number so you can go into the prize for a double
Whitney.
Pass to see Whitney.
See a non-Australian.
I love it when anyone starts a communication with nah.
Nah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Nah. Or meh.
Or meh.
Meh. Meh.
Get stuffed. Love it.
It's almost like a hashtag, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Mm. Aussie version of a hashtag.
Right, so let's have a chat about some great queer Australian films that hashtag you must see that are... I should really just stop saying hashtag, shouldn't
yeah.
I? Perhaps don't get talked about quite as often as some of these other great films, and there's often really good reasons for that. Like the film that I'm gonna start with, which is this really strange film. It is there's no other word for it other than strange. The film is The Everlasting Secret Family. It's a 1988 film from Michael Thornhill, which I confess to not having heard of before preparing for tonight's program. And I stumbled across this film. And it sounded really interesting. It's about a, quote, a beautiful, if ambitious and amoral youth tapped to become the lover of a powerful senator.
Mm.
Now, that does sound like an interesting film.
It does.
It sounds like a film I'd like to watch. And what should I do?
Do you regret that?
I do, Conrad.
How long was it?
Do you see yourself as a senator or as the slightly amoral
Do you see yourself in the film at all?
Every aspect except for the amorality? The senator. I'm totally the senator. No, but let's be frank. He's not amoral. The only thing that's quote-unquote amoral about this fellow is that he sleeps with older men for what appear to be initiation purposes, and that is one reason why this film has been correctly branded quite homophobic, and it is. But the really interesting thing about this film, and the reason I wanted to spotlight it this evening, is because we're talking about great Australian films that you must see, and for me, one thing that makes a film that you must see, is its ability to capture the essence of the times, its ability to take you back to a particular point in history and show you how society was at that time. And here we have a film that is far more explicit than I expected of a film made in 1988. Mm. These are kind of sex scenes that you, kind of nudity, inferences that you would not see in a film made the decade before. Mm. But at the same time, is far too homophobic to be made in the 90s. And so it kind of toes this kind of line between being terribly homoerotic and ridiculously homophobic.
Look, I think this film is kind of skirting around two kind of issues here. And one is the fact that this young amoral man is actually part of a cult. And the senator is part of some kind of cult.
But is it a cult?
But it's
like,
almost,
what is the cult? It's otherwise known as gay society.
No.
That's true.
No, it's not. No, there was an initiation ceremony. They had like a secret book. There was a necklace that they would wear, and they performed different roles.
It was very literal interpretation of the film.
Within this cultish kind of society, but it was really, really hinting at the very powerful ring of very powerful politicians and judges in Sydney at the time that were running with rent boys.
I mean, you say that I saw when I think that's I what saw it was really an age to. Old. Discourse about gay lifestyle and pedestry.
It was very pederastic and absolutely.
And so that sense. I mean, I think that is where a lot of this discussion about the film being homophobic comes from. But nonetheless, I think a really great thumbprint to a time in Australian history, and that's why I think it is so important to have the a local film industry, because but for that industry,
could we have told that story?
Hey Daniel, I just have my gut feeling here is that film is not going to make it onto the.
Well, it hasn't made it onto the list.
Are you sure?
No, I'm pretty sure it's not going to make it.
Well, what
there.
Was your pick, Alan?
Well, my pick was sort of trawling through the back catalogue and actually sort of I particularly wanted to focus on the 70s. Yeah. So I wanted to see what films in the 70s would sort of crop up, because we were just talking about this tonight, Conrad, that there were films that came out in the 70s that we only have a vague recollection of.
And biting my tongue.
And this is long before you were born, Daniel. So yeah. So that's where I concentrated my search. And so while preparing for the show, I came across this film called The Devil's Playground. Now, this is a film that was directed by Fred Schepisi. And Fred also directed Roxanne, A Cry in the Dark, 6 Degrees of Separation. So he's quite a well-renowned director. And so this film was made in 1976, and it won a swag of AFI films at that time. So it was actually critically acclaimed by the Australian film industry. And really, it's an autobiographical story of Fred in his own younger days living in a Catholic seminary in the 50s. Mm. And it was really a story of how the monks, the priests and all the boys actually had to cope living in this very repressive environment. And it was specifically sexually repressed, and how that repression actually exhibited itself in day-to-day life. So, you know, sure, there was some of that homoeroticism that was going on. There was, you know, some boys, in order to sublimate their physical desire, they sort of went into a kind of a very spiritual approach where they thought that they would, rather than express their sexuality, they would...
Pray the gay away?
No, not pray the gay away. But employed some sadomasochistic kind of ritual, so flogging and hot water, and so really it sort of explores you know, the monks and the boys, how they cope in this very repressive environment, and how really repressing your sexuality is such a queer thing. It's such a strange thing.
It seems to me that all of the films you watched over the weekend have to do with sadomasochism.
Well, no, I actually did watch a film called The Getting of Wisdom, which was set in the 70s as well, which is a Bruce Beresford film.
Oh, right.
And it has a lesbian subtext to it, so it's set
Speaking of lesbians,
they all turn and look at me.
Boom. You
so you're going to talk about Strange Bedfellows, I believe.
No. Absolutely not. Which actually has a lesbian storyline to it.
It's, I remember it well.
So the only authentic part of that story, right, is the daughter. Now, I went with sentimentality because the first film that I went on a hot date with my partner with in 1996, talk about going back, was Love and Other Catastrophes, an indie romantic comedy set in Melbourne.
8 years old.
Stop it. You could be my son. So it's a romantic comedy, and it's basically about university life, and Frances O'Connell is the main. Now, I saw the film originally and just imagined it was like a lesbian love story, and I watched it again. Mm. Now, spoiler, 1996, finally a lesbian film with a happy ending, you know.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding. Okay, there's a breakup, but then they get back together.
I haven't seen, this film.
It's actually really sweet.
I watched the trailer. There was not a hint of anything other than kind of high school heterosexuality in that trailer.
University heterosexual. No, but it's actually really queer. You see gay men having sex in toilets. There's this lesbian subplot. Well, not subplot, but watching it again, the main character, I'm thinking, actually, maybe I just projected lesbian on her because I think she's bisexual. Mm. Because she gives a man a happy ending. She kind of croons over this male kind of lecturer, and she's trying to get into the class. So maybe I read I wanted to into that character. But I also love that I was seeing feminine lesbians on screen. So two really feminine women as partners. And it was kind of breaking the stereotypes of what, you know, was to... be a girl liking girls back in 1996. But I'm just going to throw one more out there, which I won't talk too much about, but I needed to find lesbian Australian films because there are very few. The Monkey's Mask.
Mm.
Now, that is based on the verse novel by Dorothy Porter, and it stars Susie Porter. Kelly McGillis was imported down for that one. And
star of Top Gun.
Star of Top Gun. Yeah. So I'd highly recommend people go and say, look, that's a thriller. It's a very different story. But Love and Other Catastrophes, it's free online. Go illegally download. watch it.
Don't do that.
No, don't do that.
Don't do that.
So
it's
I
free
will.
Online. It's free online.
because I am the actual outsider here. The film I chose, as Daniel mentioned before, is only 3 years old. It's an independent Aussie film called Drown. It's kind of got this really intense. It is a very intense film. It's about a lifeguard. Who is very lifesaver, who is extremely popular and really the best kind of dude at the beach amongst all of his crew. This new guy comes in and kind of takes over from winning all the competitions and being the big man around the beach. And it turns out that the new guy is gay, and it starts off this whole chain of events. It was quite a hard watch. For that kind of film, it brought back a lot of memories for me because I grew up in a coastal town. There was a lot of that kind of toxic masculinity stuff that came in there. The ending was really unsatisfying for me, but the actual film itself was really well done. It's not a film that I think is probably on the top of many people's list to must see it.
It's not a history. Yeah. History is not going to remember this film, but it is a good film.
It is a good film, and I think it did really well at NQFF, and it's one of those films that, again, when I was talking about before, what I love about Australian films is that they constantly are telling me stories about things that I don't necessarily think of immediately as like, oh, that's a really Australian story. But that's what they do really, really well. And you Aussies need to stop having so much cultural cringe and embrace elements of yourselves.
Really,
because you make great films.
Mm. Now, we have had another message in.
We have, and this one starts off with meh. Night Out is camp, black and white brutal Melbourne realism with a killer beat sex. Wow.
Nice.
Queer history. Also, Down River has a good queer eroticism in a post-gay climate, David B. So, thanks, David. And we agree with you on Down River as one of our
Well, we did have
films.
Grant in the studio, the director of Down River. David, message in your membership number and we will get these Whitney tickets to you. But that's it for another week of Outtakes. If you want to get involved with the films that hashtag you must see campaign, please do head to the Adelaide Film Festival website where you can cast your votes. But that's it for another week of Outtakes.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.